Kevin Carr is with us, the host of Fat Guys at the Movies, which airs every Saturday night at 6 here on News Talk 590 WVLK. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Doing good. This was from, it was a, the claim came from a British gambling site called Party Casino. I think Variety picked this up. But what they did was they looked at box office data going back 37 years to 1980 and determine which actor provided the best return for the money spent on their movies. In order to qualify, an actor had to have starred in at least 10 movies. And so the most profitable actor, using this formula, the most profitable actor in Hollywood is Emilio Estevez.
Really?
He did Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, The Mighty Ducks, and the Young Gun movies. He hadn't done much over the last two decades, but that was enough. The site says that for every $1 spent on Emilio's movies, they generated $6.70 at the box office. I missed part of that. Your phone kind of garbled on me a little bit, but Men at Work, I heard that. Yeah, I guess they took into account even the turkeys, the bombs that he came up with. Jean-Claude Van Damme was next, and then Mel Gibson and Tyler Perry. Well, and you got Tyler Perry's got another movie coming out this week. The least profitable actor who only returned 10 cents for every dollar spent was Brad Pitt, followed by Johnny Depp, and then Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro only returned 24 cents. Hugh Jackman and Anthony Hopkins were the others.
I would have expected Johnny Depp to be on there because outside of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, he's not a big star. I mean, and the other question I had, would it take into account international box office? Because you throw international box office in for Johnny Depp, he becomes a lot more profitable.
Yeah, I would imagine this is only domestic box office, I would think. Because, some of the Brat Pack movies, they probably weren't that popular overseas. And I don't know. I don't know how much distribution of our movies overseas was going on, say, in the early 80s. But anyway, I thought that was kind of fun. Josh Brolin and Jennifer Connelly, along with Jeff Bridges, star in Only the Brave. It's a drama based on the Yarnell Hill fire that killed 19 Granite Mountain hotshot firefighters. This is our first movie this week, Only the Brave. Was it exciting? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of movie that you expect. It's exactly what you expect for this kind of movie, where it's showing people, just everyday American heroes doing their job, and it shows them leading up to it, how they got the certification, and also in their private lives, but you also see the harrowing acts that they have to do and how they do fight the fire right head on. And it's also kind of relevant because, wildfires are in the news nowadays, especially with what's going on in California. So it's high on everybody's mind. But for a year we've got superheroes and action heroes, it's nice to see something about the real American heroes as well.
All right, so you would approve and would recommend Only the Brave?
Absolutely. I think it's worth checking out.
The next one, I don't know where this movie gets approval to be made. I don't know. Maybe it's good. I just don't know how much interest there would be in Mark Felt, the man who brought down the White House, Liam Neeson, in this political thriller about Watergate. Now, of course, All the President's Men was a very popular movie, and of course, Watergate was a significant historic political scandal. Felt, of course, was Deep Throat, the Washington whistleblower whose real identity wasn't revealed until nearly three decades later. I don't know. I guess I'm just wondering who in the pitch meeting thought that people would want to see a movie about the Deep Throat in Watergate, but maybe I'm wrong. Does the movie stand on its own? Do you think the movie will attract people that aren't just history buffs that want to go see a movie about Deep Throat?
Well, first of all, you got to remember, Deep Throat, this is the Watergate Deep Throat. Don't go searching Deep Throat on the internet and looking for the movie because you're going to get something totally different.
That's right.
But anyway, in terms of this movie, it is a Sony Pictures classic, so it's a little bit more of an art house film. And so it's going to get more of a smaller release. It's made for a smaller crowd heading into awards season is what I think what it's looking for. What I found interesting about it is I'm in my 40s, so I was a toddler when this was going on. And even though I've heard all about Watergate and I've seen All the President's Men, this gives a perspective from inside the FBI because it's right after Hoover died and you've got the political powers trying to pull the FBI in different directions, and they're trying to keep their autonomy, and the White House is trying to influence them. And it is, you know, it's relevant to today's stuff that's going on, because you do have an FBI that's been involved in pulling and pushing and political interests in just our nation right now, and an administration that is having a less than complacent relationship with the Bureau. So I think that we have something that is relevant to our history now. But it's also, like I said, the most interesting part is because it's coming from an FBI person's point of view rather than, like, the reporters or the public or even the administration.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a movie that I would be interested in, but if you say it's going to play in, it's mostly an art house film, then maybe they're not expecting that much. So, all right.
And, yeah, I wouldn't expect like $20 million dollars this weekend out of this one. It's going to be of smaller interest, but just because fewer people see it doesn't mean it's not a good movie. I enjoyed it.
I didn't mean to. I was just kind of remarking from the business standpoint that I would have thought a movie like this would have had trouble at the pitch. But evidently they made the film and you like it, so it might be worth seeing. And next movie is The Snowman. Michael Fassbender plays a detective trying to stop a serial killer. I guess, Kevin, this was based on a popular novel.
Yeah, a popular novel from Norway, and it takes place in Norway. It's about a serial killer who emerges at the first snowfall of the year and kills women. And in Oslo, so it is it's very Norwegian. If you've seen any Norwegian films, they tend to be very heavy and dour, and at times depressing. Even the comedies are depressing. But it's a neat idea, and it has great actors in it. It's got Michael Fassbender, Rebecca Ferguson, J.K. Simmons. The biggest problem is there's something lost in translation, not from Norwegian to English, but from the book to the big screen, whereas there's so much stuff from the backstory of the book that I think they're trying to cram into this movie that it just gets very convoluted and hard to follow, and, you know, you're going down paths that you don't really care about, and you kind of want to get back to the serial killer, and they kind of squander that, which could have been such a legendary, iconic character, but I think it just fizzles.
And finally, Breathe. This is not a movie that I know anything about. What's the deal here?
Well, it's a true story of Robin Cavendish, who was a guy who was paralyzed from the neck down by polio when he was only 28 years old. He was only given a couple months to live, but he was determined to find a way to have some normal life. And so he found a way to get out of the hospital. He worked with people who called chairs that would put respirators in them and give mobility to those that are paralyzed, and get them out of iron lungs and get them out of the hospital. So it's an inspiring story and a true story. It's directed by Andy Serkis, who's best known for doing motion capture performances like Gollum in Lord of the Rings or in the Planet of the Apes movies. But he's directing this one because he's a first-time director. He doesn't quite have the nuance of the emotional scenes to really give him the power on top of it. It's produced by Cavendish's son, who is a business partner with Andy Serkis, and as much as I respect him and his father, he's a little too close to the story to really give a good perspective, and it just doesn't come across as being as dramatic or powerful as it could be.
Sounds like we're batting .500 this week. What may, I guess, take our average down below .500 would be the new Tyler Perry film, Boo 2, A Madea Halloween, which was not screened ahead of time, but I get a sense you're not a big fan anyway.
So me and my son rented the original Boo, because I said, if I want to see this one, I better see what happened to the first one, because I would hate to be confused. Well, I saw this movie and I was confused. I don't even think Tyler Perry writes scripts anymore. He has candles at the beginning, he has credits at the end, and then he just puts stuff in the movie that's convoluted and doesn't make sense. So I expect nothing more from this movie.
All right. Busy week at the movie theaters this weekend, and you can catch up more on all the movies that are out with Fat Guys at the Movies Saturday evening at 6. Kevin, thanks so much.
All right, thanks.